Welcome to the Happiness First Radio Show, where you learn to consciously create the life you want. Your host, Lorraine Gordon, an expert in law of attraction and present moment awareness, along with her expert guests, give you the tools you need to focus your attention and thoughts to create your best life. And now, here's your host, Lorraine Gordon.
Welcome to Your Happiness Way Radio with me, your host and online coach, Lorraine Gordon. And if you're a regular listener, then you know that the information and the guests that I bring you is to help you create a happier and more love-filled life, a more abundant life in every way, including material goodies. You may know that I am a believer in getting the material goodies that you want. And as you know, I have had them to excess and also lived without that material splendor. And that taught me a lot. And the main thing is something that we have heard so many times. This appears to be one of those things that I had to experience in order to really understand. Things don't really bring you happiness. Of course, they add to your life if you appreciate them. But I learned that in order to have it all, we start with happiness. And that's why I say, happiness first, the riches will follow. And I want to thank you for being such loyal listeners and keeping my show in the top 10% of its kind. I know how valuable your time is, and I thank you for spending it with me and the expert guests that I bring you. And today, I'm very excited to be bringing you an expert in the field of helping her clients move through fear so they can really live their best life. Kathleen Murray is a life coach, speaker, blogger, and fear fighter. Her expertise is in helping women get the courage to leave their job, referred to as J-O-B, and instead, live their purpose. She takes women through the steps they need to move past their fears and embrace their God-given purpose. She's tired of seeing women play it safe and compromise their passion. Kathleen knows that when courageous women step up, changes are made and lives are revolutionized. And so with that, I want to welcome my good friend, my mastermind partner, Kathleen Murray. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Lorraine. Thanks so much for letting me be on the show with you today. I'm so excited.
I am so excited to have you and the wisdom that you're able to bring my guests. You know, we talk about so many things and overcoming fear in order to really be who you are is something we haven't spent a whole lot of time on. So I'm delighted to have you bring your expertise to us.
I am too. I'm excited.
So let's start with something that you have mentioned to me personally and you've talked about, and that's pretending to be happy. Why don't you tell me what pretending has meant to you and what you think it means to other women, because I think many of us put on that pretending persona or face.
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, I often describe it as we wear a mask. And for me, I've got kind of a couple experiences of where I really wore a mask for quite some time. And so what's interesting is my story to life coaching actually starts with politics, you know, that subject we're not supposed to be talking about in polite conversations. But my career when I started out of college was in political campaigns. After college, I ended up traveling around the country, working for different candidates, presidential campaigns. I ended up landing in Chicago, where I was the finance director for Chicago's Mayor Daley. I started my own political fundraising firm. I had a six-figure business, an office off the Magnificent Mile. You know, Everybody just viewed me as this really successful political operative in Chicago. Mm. And it was fun, and I had a blast, and I really enjoyed it. But there was a part of me absolutely wearing a mask, pretending I was happy, because in my personal life, I was actually pretty lonely as my political friends started getting married and moving to the suburbs of Chicago and having babies. And I hadn't found that special person yet. But yet, you know, I kind of pretended everything was going really well. And then I did meet the love of my life. And he convinced me to sell my business in Chicago and move to northern Minnesota, an hour and a half from the Canadian border.
Wow.
So I left a town of 1.7 million people, and I moved to a town of 9,000.
Mm. And talk about completely changing your life. I mean, so you met the love of your life, and you decided that this man was going to sort of steer your destiny, and you followed him.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a mutual decision, and I had worked around the country in a number of places. I was in Iowa during the caucuses in 1988, and I was in New Jersey and Washington, D.C., so I had lived a number of places and thought, okay, well, this will just be another adventure for me and, you know, a different phase of my life. So I just was willing to, quote-unquote, give it a shot. And so we got married in May of 1998, and we were temporarily living at the family cabin on the lake up there, which was beautiful, while we were going to build a home on the other side of the lake. And I can still remember sitting there in October, and it was when it was starting to get dark early, and it started snowing in October. And
cold, dreary.
Yes, and I had my first panic attack.
Oh.
And it just totally threw me for a loop. I just was like, what is going on? What is this? I don't understand this feeling. I don't understand what my body is doing. And it literally started me on an almost 10-year journey through severe panic attacks and anxiety issues.
You know, I have to regress just a bit, because you are sitting in front of a lake in a very peaceful, calm area. You're not in the middle of a political campaign. You're not in a big city. You're not waiting in line, pushing and shoving to get into a play or a restaurant sooner. And yet in this beautiful, peaceful place, you have a panic attack. Please explain that to us, because I think many people suffer the same thing, but they don't even know that that's what it is.
Well, I think for me, you describe it as this peaceful, lovely, calm place. But in my mind, I was saying isolated, dark, alone, dreary.
Oh.
You know, there was not one positive adjective in my mind in the midst of that panic attack.
Mm. And isn't that true? Reality is perception.
Totally, totally. So, you know, for me, it was that thriving of that city life that I loved. And, you know, shoot, I left that behind, and I'm sitting here in this cabin by myself, not knowing many people in this small town, and it starts snowing in October. What did I get myself into?
Wow. Wow. Frightening.
Yes.
So what did you do? How did you handle that? You had basically a new marriage. How did you deal with that?
Well, I didn't handle it very well. And quite frankly, as I talk about wearing the mask, I totally put on a mask, because I didn't want anyone to know that I sold this business. I left this city. I was this great political operative, and I moved to this place and it wasn't working. So, and I had gotten a job as a marketing and development director at the hospital, and I pretended everything was fine, and I kept trying to bury over and over again every panic attack, every anxiety issue I was having. And so, there was a number of things going on. We adopted three children from Guatemala. Oh. And so I didn't want anybody to know anything wasn't going well.
How did you take that on while you were basically sort of in the midst of anxiety? How did you do that?
Denial.
Oh,
you know,
God.
I just was in complete denial. And it wasn't like I wasn't trying to overcome the panic attacks. you know, that type A perfectionist personality, which is very susceptible to panic attacks, is you are looking to solve a problem. I have this problem of panic, and I'm going to try and solve it.
Wow.
So I did a lot of reading. I bought an infomercial online from some info show that was on one night about anxiety and depression, and listened to those takes over and over again.
Did it help you?
Not really.
Oh, okay.
You know, I think if anything, everything I was reading and trying to do was all about trying to deal with the symptoms. So how do I try and switch my brain in the moment and think of something different? Or how do I keep myself busy so I don't have to think about panic? How do I focus on something else? It was all diversion techniques I felt like I was learning, you know, for many, many years till I really got to the root and figured it out, which I describe it as the four keys that really helped me kind of come out of this.
Well, please tell us about that, because this is new. I don't think you've heard this before. Please tell us.
Well, one of the things I want to talk about a little bit first is what is the cost of wearing the mask? Because I think for me, I was really trying to convince myself for the longest time that that was the right path. I had a wonderful husband. I really had a great job. I adopted these amazing, beautiful children. So who was I to have these issues?
Oh, so it's a, in other words, it's a little bit of a religious sort of thing. I'm supposed to be grateful for the things I have that could be creating a little guilt in there.
Yes, no? Yes, okay. Yes, exactly. So let's just pretend everything's okay. But there's a cost that we all, I think, suffer from wearing the mask. And, you know, for many ways, when I look back on it, I think there were three things going on for me that really cost me. One was truly authentic relationships. You know, especially I was new to this small town, and I think in many ways I put up a guard and a wall to, because I didn't want anybody to really know how much I was struggling. So I think it really cost me authentic, deep friendships during those years. And I think another cost is it just kept me stuck. I wasn't really being honest about what was going on, that I really struggled with living in a small town with such long winters, and I didn't really want to say that out loud, so I didn't say anything.
And you didn't tell even your husband?
Well, he knew, and I think I struggled. I can't really remember. You know, there's a lot of times where I'm just going to, you know, I'm not remember all the details about it. But I think I didn't tell him for quite a long time, and I think when I actually told him, I didn't really understand what was going on. I was telling him what was happening with me, but I'm not sure I really knew the reason.
Right. So you knew you were miserable, but you couldn't pinpoint it to the cold, dark winters necessarily. And that would be kind of hard to say, hey, I just married you. We moved to your town. We adopted these beautiful children, and I'm miserable, and I don't really know why. That would be very difficult.
Yes. And so the other cost of wearing the mask was irritability. I had such a short fuse. I would get irritable so quickly.
So you were angry.
Oh yes. And I really took it out on my kids quite a bit. And I think, you know, at the time, I'm sure I was thinking, why don't I have these kids that behave well? Why aren't they behaving well at the restaurant or at church or, you know, and here it was all about, they were just matching my energy. They were matching my irritability and my anger. Now, I can look back on that now and realize it, but at the time, I had such a short fuse and I didn't really know that that was being brought on by my panic and anxiety on top of wearing the mask, pretending it wasn't happening at all.
You know, this is sort of amazing to me. You've been married for how many years now?
18.
And you've managed through these sort of discrepancies and these almost deceit, because you were pretending to be something you weren't, and yet your marriage survived. To what do you attribute that?
Oh, I think part of it is I did have a very loving husband who was just so supportive. I mean, I was a nutcase for quite a long time.
And that's funny.
And I think he, you know, God love him, was just tolerating that. And I love him and was trying to make it work. And I think we really just did have that commitment to each other to try and make that happen. and kind of get through it. For it was truly for better or worse, and we definitely had the worst part in the early part.
So you believed in you believed in the commitment of the marriage.
Totally.
Now, see, you know, I'm married almost 44 years, and I do believe that part of the reason that it's worked for us is, A, I too have an incredibly supportive, understanding husband, because I have not been the easiest in the world, but also we really do believe in the commitment, and because of that, we understand there are going to be highs. So for all of you listening out there that are experiencing lows in your marriage, stick it out. Because if you have a man or a woman that basically has similar values to you, who you can respect in one way or another, you will, the pendulum swings and you can make it. So to just give up and run away is not necessary. Stick it out.
Yeah, I think that's so true, especially your comment about the values. If you have the same values and the core beliefs, you know, with each other, that's not easy to find with somebody else. You may think the grass is greener, but if those core values are there for each other, oh gosh, try and make it work.
So true. So true. And especially if you have children. You know, you hear a lot about staying together for the children. And I don't believe staying together just for the children's sake is necessarily so true. But I believe if you truly both believe in raising a healthy, happy family, that can be the value that you need that will tie you together. So in a sense, it's not just for the children. It's for you as well.
Yes, because you're honoring your value.
Exactly. Exactly. And you know, you never hear that.
Yeah.
So tell us more. What was key number two?
Well, key number one was getting your unconscious mind in alignment with your conscious mind. And for me, and that was in the beginning, I had no clue when I was struggling with the panic attacks to realize that I was really the one causing the panic attacks. Now, that seems crazy because I wanted to be over the panic attacks. I didn't want these panic attacks. But when I would be sitting there in the midst of one, I'd be saying, I don't want to have a panic attack. I don't want to do this. Oh, please don't, you know, let me avoid this. The unconscious mind can't process a negative. When I was sitting there saying, don't have a panic attack today, please don't have a panic attack today, your unconscious mind doesn't hear the don't part. All it knows is that you brought into consciousness
panic attack.
And so, you know, your unconscious mind just is full of all these old files that are willing to go pull out that, remember when you did that, Kathleen? You had a panic attack. Remember when you went to that restaurant? You had a panic attack. Remember when you got on the plane? You had a panic attack. So every instance, your unconscious mind goes back to those old file cabinets and pulls those out.
Now, Kathleen, I know you to a degree. And the degree that I know you shows a self-confidence, self-assured, lovely, and professional woman. And it would be difficult for me to understand what your panic attack may have looked like to the outside world. Was it apparent?
Oh, gosh, no one knew what was going on with me. No one.
So then the most important question is, what was going on with you so that our listeners can understand what could be, they can relate to you on that level?
What was going on with me physically or really deep down what was going
on? In every way. What was it like?
Well, my panic attacks manifest themselves in lots of different ways. But my panic attack was really all about kind of that rapid heartbeat, feeling very out of sorts, like I was kind of floating above myself. And my biggest thing was I felt trapped. I wanted to get out. I wanted to get somewhere safe. So I wanted to get home. That agoraphobia that so many people go through where they just end up staying trapped in their home, I could totally see there where that could happen and does happen for a lot of people. It didn't totally happen for me, but I definitely became very homebound because that was safe. You know, I could lock myself away and hide, and nobody would have to see my panic attack, or I didn't have to worry about having one. So I was a total travel nut. I traveled to Australia by myself.
Well, how do you do that if you really want to stay home, though? How does that work?
Well, that's what I'm saying is when I was really in the midst of my panic attacks, I did not travel at all.
Oh, okay.
I had a group of high school friends where for the last 25 years, we would get together every weekend in the fall. I probably missed 5 or 6 of those trips with all kinds of reasons why I couldn't come that year. But I just didn't want to go and have a panic attack and be far away from home.
So you wanted to stay home even though this was a home that was dark and dreary and cold and it wasn't even comfortable for you.
Yeah, it was.
Wow. Yeah, that had to really make your panic attack even worse.
Yes. And what was interesting, because there was no logic to it, because if I would go away and come home, the panic attacks were always worse on the way home than they were going somewhere. But I didn't get why that was happening.
Oh,
wow. I just wasn't getting it. I wasn't understanding it.
And okay, so now let's just fast forward. Now you understand it. What do you understand? I mean, help me to understand it.
Well, what I understand now is that my fear about getting on the plane and having the panic attack or going out to a restaurant and having my stomach get upset by the dinner and maybe getting sick and needing to go home, all these little things that could set off a panic attack were all just masking and hiding the real fear. Let's focus on my upset stomach or flying because then I don't have to look at the real fear.
What was the real fear?
Well, the real deep down scare the shit out of me fear was, if I can cuss on your radio show.
Why not?
is that if I don't like living in this place, in this hometown of my husband where he loves building this great law practice and loves raising his children in his hometown, if I don't like living here, what does this mean for my marriage?
Wow. Huge.
Will I get divorced? What's going to happen with us?
Wow.
What will happen to me? That was the deep, dark, oh gosh, I don't want to look at that fear. So I'm going to freak out about going on a plane or freak out about eating food in a restaurant.
Oh, okay. You know, you've got so much to tell us. I can't wait to hear more. We want to know if you're still happily married. But first, we're going to take a word from my sponsors, and we'll be right back, okay?
Have you ever imagined a life without worries, fears, and problems? What if I told you that you no longer had to live like that? Changes are possible for you through my teachings and affirmations, CDs, DVDs, and apps. Through our book, Peace in the Present Moment, Eckhart Tolle, Byron Katie, and I can show you how living in the present moment will change your life. Visit my website, peaceinthepresentmoment.net, and get inspired on my Facebook page of over 73,000 likes.
The power of the I Am is yours at loaaffirmations.com. Bringing you the very best in audio affirmations programs and introducing our newest title, I Am Happy, Healthy, and Wealthy. All of the loaaffirmations.com programs are MP3 instant downloads and come with multiple audio and subliminal tracks. Order yours today at loaaffirmations.com.
Okay, we're back again with Fear Fighter Kathleen Murray. Kathleen, tell us more. So you're actually having a fear of maybe realizing your marriage isn't working the way you want. So instead you put it off on having a meal that might upset your stomach or getting on a plane that might scare you to death. Explain that further to us.
Well, it really is about that. For panic attacks to truly go away, you've got to actually face the fear that is causing the underlying panic. And if you don't truly face it, find out what it has to tell you or what you need to learn from it, then it's always chasing you. It's just always behind you. It's always following you. And so for me, my panic attacks went on for almost 10 years.
Wow.
Because I was trying to figure out strategies to avoid the panic incident or, you know, strategies of diversion. And it was never really I'm going to turn around and actually face you face to face.
But
I'm going to face
the fear. Did you know that you were diverting? Did you understand that there was something deeper than that? Or did you really think it was about eating spaghetti on a night when your body couldn't handle spaghetti?
Yeah, no, I didn't really get that that's what it was about.
Okay, so that therein lays the question. What was the key that allowed you to realize that it was far deeper than that so that you could delve into that arena?
Well, it was truly hooking up with the right therapist who I still remember my first conversation with her where I'm kind of curled in my bed calling her, and I even forget where I got her name, but I just connected with her instantly, and she said to me, well, we're just going to have to face the fear. That's the first thing we really got to do. And I was like, oh, no, what do you mean? Isn't there any other strategies we can look at first? I mean, I remember thinking, oh, holy smokes, she is really going to make me do this. And she did.
Wow.
I mean, it, you know, that's what I needed. And
she was strong. And how did you have, but you were strong too, because you hung in there.
Well, I think part of it was I finally was ready. I mean, I just knew I cannot keep going this way. I just, the mental energy it takes to pretend and wear a mask is exhausting. It's completely exhausting. And that mental energy, I wanted to use it to be a good mom and have fun and enjoy my husband and figure out how to enjoy where I was living. I mean, I was exhausted pretending. I think that's where, for me, I just reached my breaking point. And even though it scared the hell out of me when she said, we're going to face the fear, I thought, okay, I'm ready to do it.
How many of your friends, your real friends, knew what you had been going through?
Two.
So you
maybe three.
You did have some people you could truly pour your heart out to.
Yeah, I didn't tell them for a very long time. But
that was lonely then. Very lonely.
Yes, very lonely. And I do think that's another cost of wearing the mask is loneliness. Mm. And I think many, many people, I think there's an epidemic of loneliness. In the whole Facebook social media world of, you know, we're comparing our insides with everybody's outsides, and we just feel really lonely because we can't admit that we're struggling because on Facebook, they look so happy.
You know, it's funny because I interview all those people. And it's not what it looks like. Trust me.
Exactly.
It's true. Yeah, but it is interesting how it is so important for so many of us to put out that mask. And I think that's society, you know, mm-hmm. that ego sort of thing that will never make us happy, ever.
Yeah, totally agree.
So what happened? What happened that you got to the point where you could accept long winters, cold days, living in an arena where maybe you weren't the political, you know, important, you know, that woman that you once were? Enjoying your children, mm-hmm. changing your life. What happened that allowed you to be happy and accept that?
Well, as I talk about, I think there were four keys for me. But again, the big one was facing the fears. And the way that my therapist worked with me on it and the way I work with my clients on it is an NLP technique that actually really is about facing the fear. And, you know, I don't know if your listeners are familiar with NLP techniques or neuro-linguistic programming, but it really was going in and getting to that cellular part of my body that was holding on to that and literally pulling it out of me and releasing it.
Okay.
And that was the key.
How did you do that?
Okay. So neuro-linguistic programming is really all about, you know, the neuro part talks about, you know, the nervous system and our five senses, you know, sight, hearing, touch, smell, taste. And then linguistic is really all about kind of the language of how we process things in our mind. So if I said the word plane, your 10 of your listeners would have 10 different images. Somebody might picture one from them looking at the ground and looking at it up in the sky. Another person actually pictures them on the plane. Another person has an emotional reaction to being scared of being on a plane. You know, we all process in our own way. So the NLP techniques is all about how do we take our mind's own language and how we view things and reprogram it so that it helps us serves us well and serves us in a positive outcome as opposed to a negative outcome. So what that for me was about with the facing the fear technique is first of all, you start with kind of a breathing relaxation technique and get you in a very comfortable state. And then you literally go in and bring up that fear in you. You think back on, you know, when was your last panic attack and where do you feel that in your body? And you kind of say, okay, I'm feeling that in my stomach. And then let's dig a little deeper. What does that look like? Okay, it feels like this big, heavy gray brick on my stomach. And then we pull that out of us. We're literally going to say, all right, we're going to take that brick out of you and we're going to have a conversation with that brick. And when I do this with my clients, they're like, we're going to what? And I'm like, okay, just keep going with me. I want you to visualize that heavy brick that was sitting on your stomach. I want you to ask that brick, what is it here for? What is it showing up for? And usually you just really listen for what's popping in your head. What's coming up intuitively when you say, you know, what is your purpose when you're talking to this brick? And usually it'll say, I'm here to protect you. I'm here to keep you safe. I'm here to help you avoid something. You know, there's a reason that it's showing up. And then the key question we ask is, when did you first show up in my life?
Oh, that's an interesting one, isn't it?
Yes, because usually what always happens, I did this with a client and it was amazing because it was about his relationship with his spouse and he was trying to make it better. And there was an issue that we kind of delved in and looked at. And I said, well, when did it first come up? And he said, wow, this is really weird. I thought of this. My sister's suicide when I was 12.
Oh, my goodness.
He's in his 40s. He would never have thought to link the challenges he was having with his wife with that. But again, pulling it out of yourself, looking at it objectively, just trying to have this conversation with it, opens up your mind to really digging deeper to what's going on. You know, so for me, some of my stuff coming up was, you know, different fears of loneliness and things when I was little. And so I had to heal. What you're trying to do is really heal that younger version of you that experienced these episodes, because that person is kind of stuck in there saying, hey, Kathleen, remember when you were, you know, when you were going to do that and that, and when you were little? So 12-year-old Kathleen is making decisions for 45-year-old Kathleen.
Interesting. Very interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So what we want to do is we want to heal the 12-year-old Kathleen. And that's what we do is we literally go back. We create a visualization where we go back to that time and you go and you sit with that younger version of yourself. You have a conversation. You ask what she needs to heal. And then, you know, again, we create a healing light that then heals that person. And we lift that younger version of ourself off into the heavens to be healed. So you're literally taking it out of you, healing it, and releasing it. And you usually feel lighter, you feel freer, and again, just piece by piece, you start to heal those younger parts of you that have struggled for so long.
And so that worked for you in order so that you could become your real self?
Yes. Wow. Yeah, it was huge for me, and it was amazing what come up. My therapist would say, well, when did you first have this feeling? I was just amazed by what would pop in my head, you know, and sometimes it was even carrying stuff from my ancestry, you know, my grandmother, where I'd say, well, I just have a vision of my grandmother in bed. Where did that come from? But it was just amazing because, again, we are cellular beings. Our body, mind, spirits are connected. So we don't just inherit eye color or height. We inherit anxieties, fears, all kinds of issues from our parents, our grandparents, you know, even
well, it is cellular.
Yes.
There's no question. That's why I use a technique that is somewhat similar but a little different. And I do have a background, as you do. But I use something called pain body release, which releases the pain from not only this lifetime, but culturally, starting from in utero and way back even from your culture, certainly from your ancestors. We do carry these pains cellularly, and in order to create that new life, that healing, sometimes it takes that type of work. Often it does, if we're to be honest with ourselves.
I totally agree. And I don't think anybody really realizes that until you do this work, that it isn't just about logically trying to talk yourself out of it just analytically doing it. It really is how do you cellularly heal yourself from that.
You know, I met you through a group that we both belong to, and I was immediately impressed with you. Was I impressed with the mask, or was I impressed with you, Kathleen?
Well, you know, I think for me, in many ways, I'm so upfront now about my journey, because I think authenticity is just so much more appealing and more real and more connected. So I feel like you definitely were meeting the real me, because,
I wish you lived closer. We'd meet for a happy hour.
Well, and you're in California, so sometimes in Minnesota, I do wish I lived closer to you.
Yeah, I mean, it's a gorgeous day out today, I must say.
Yeah.
It's funny.
That is so funny. You have taught us so much today, but I want to ask you, what was your big fear when you were wearing the mask?
Well, I think the big fear I talked about earlier was about my marriage. In terms of you know, could that survive me not living where he wanted to live?
Right.
But I think another even deeper fear of that is, if you really knew me, would you love me?
Oh, you know, painful. So yeah, frightening.
Yeah.
And let me ask you this: did you rip off your mask and show your truth to him?
Oh yes.
And,
you know, he's an incredibly loving person, again, with similar values.
Is it possible he'd already seen the real you?
Yes, I think in many ways it was. But he also knew the big, sharp political operative from Chicago. I mean, I remember him introducing me a lot as she was Mayor Daley's finance director. She had her own firm in Chicago. So when he would introduce me sometimes... Mm. I definitely felt like, I have to be that person that he first met in Chicago.
That he's proud of, that he's showing off on his on his arm.
Yes,
that eye candy, that jewelry in a sense, right?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, he was absolutely very proud.
That's a lot of pressure. Even though it's so wonderful to feel honored for your accomplishments, it's still rather scary when it comes down to the deep essence of who you really, really are underneath all those things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. You have taught us so much. So what was the final key?
Well, I think two final keys. One is the practice of gratitude. That was a good start for me even before I did the Face the Fear work. And so when I'm sitting there, because, you know, I did move from northern Minnesota about 5 years ago, but I didn't know that was going to happen for me. I did have to figure out how to enjoy living up there if I wanted to stay married to this man and have this family with him. And so I remember just starting in the winter, it was just small stuff of, thank you, God, that the sun is shining today. And it was, well, it might be two below, I'm just going to wear more layers when I go for a walk, as opposed to not walking at all.
And thank you that I have legs to walk on.
And just subtle little things. Right. I'm so glad that my kids love sledding in the snow, as opposed to, ooh, it's snowing and I've got to drive in this weather.
Aren't we talking about a difference in perspective? Where we put our focus and our attention.
Yes. Yeah. A lens of gratitude versus a lens of lack. You know, or what's wrong. So yeah, it's a total shift in perspective. That was key for me. And the other thing I think for me was really just connecting back to my higher source, my God. And I was raised Catholic, and it was very, you know, ritual, sacraments, church on Sunday. And so did I have a personal connection to God? No, I had a connection to my religion, my all-girls Catholic high school and all that I really got away from for many, many years, I think in my 20s during my years in politics. But of course, when you are down on your knees, curled up in the fetal position, you're reaching out for anything. And that's where I kind of reached back out to my faith and really having that relationship, knowing that I'm never alone. God is always there with me. So even if I was feeling lonely in the dark days of winter, I could really fall back on, I wasn't really alone. I did have God there to support me and be with me and protect me and hold me up until I was ready to stand up on my own again.
Such a comfort. Let me ask you this. I mean, for those of you that don't know Kathleen, you're going to see a picture of her on the listening page. And you're going to see she's a lovely, vital woman. Difficult to believe that she too has problems. And isn't that the truth, though, Kathleen? Doesn't everyone out there, regardless of their appearance, their profession, their beauty, their money, don't they all have something deep that most of them could be hiding, that could be destroying and breaking their hearts?
Yeah, absolutely. I just think there are so many, especially as I describe those type A personality women, we fill our lives with busy calendars, running our kids everywhere, all kinds of activities. We just keep ourselves so busy to avoid really looking at what will fulfill us on the inside. Wow. We're so busy on the outside, and we just really avoid that very basic, easy fulfillment we could get on the inside.
Mm-hmm. A life that can look so full and so beautiful and could be so empty on the inside.
Yes. I mean, no one in Chicago, I think, would have known how a lot of times on the weekends and stuff, I was alone. I had a thriving, successful business, but I spent a lot of time alone in my, later 20s. You know, hoping I was going to find somebody and connect nobody would have known that.
Interesting. So interesting. So take heart. All of you ladies out there, understand that when it can happen to a Kathleen, it can certainly be true for you as well. And there is and can be a happy ending. And I want to tell all of you that Kathleen has offered to give us as her gift, a free book that she wrote called Love It or Leave It, How to Finally Stop Tolerating Your Good Job. And this has to do with fear, correct, Kathleen?
Yes. It's all about, I think there are many, many women who get up every morning to go to a job that they have not liked for years, either because it pays good money or it provides the health insurance for the family, or, they'd have a good job title, but deep down they are not satisfied or fulfilled in that job. And so they have been in this job for years. And that's why I was so excited to do this book, to help people really walk through the questions they need to ask themselves to figure out whether they could figure out how to love that job again or it's time to leave it. And then also offer some practical steps about how to maybe start looking at leaving it.
I think that's, such an incredible gift because it encompasses so much of what we've been talking about. It's taking off the mask, because in order to stop tolerating your good job, you have to be true to yourself. And in doing that, you've shown us that life does go on. And yes, you can once again be successful in the arena that you're meant to be in.
Yes. And for me, I mean, again, I thought I was going to, I turned my life around in terms of my inner happiness came about still while I was living in a town of 9,000 that had long, long winters. Wow. I found my happiness again.
Wow.
So what's interesting is when I was open to the happiness, I let it in, then the opportunity came up to move to a place where I am 10 times happier,
Now that's very interesting because that's so much of what I teach. You attract where you put your attention. When you're happy, your energy is such that you begin to attract happier things. And that's kind of what happened to you, isn't it?
Exactly. You talk about happiness first. That's exactly what happened. I got my happiness back. And all of a sudden, quote unquote, out of the blue, which you and I both know wasn't out of the blue, my husband had an amazing job opportunity offered to him in the Twin Cities. So I got back to the big city life and now have
better
a
weather.
Yes, better weather and a whole new career path. That wow. is absolutely my mission in life now.
To help others that relate to you, where you can yes. direct, you can give them lessons that you have directly learned.
Yes, that's where I thought there is a reason I went through that for as long as I did and the struggle I went through. And it certainly wasn't just to move to another city and, you know, have a good, happy marriage and life. It is truly, I'm using what I went through to help other women not struggle as long as I did, because you don't have to struggle that long wearing the mask.
Greater meaning.
Yes.
I have so enjoyed having you here today. And I, before we go, I want to ask you to once again join us. I think you have a lot more to teach us, so hopefully you'll be open to coming on another date. And two, do you want to leave the audience with something, some pearls of wisdom?
Well, it's funny. You and I talked about this a little, I think, on our last mastermind call, is we talk about how so many people say, well, I just feel stuck. I feel stuck. And how do I get unstuck? And it is all about if you just take one step, you're unstuck.
Yeah.
Just one small step. So what's one thing you could do to try and get yourself unstuck, or to take the mask off, or to step out of fear?
It becomes so much more doable and less scary.
Yes, when you just think of one thing. And if you'd pick anything, my suggestion would be start with gratitude. So try and start keeping a gratitude journal. And it's so helpful on changing your perspective of how you look at things, and then it opens you up to other things and breeds happiness and more confidence that I think can then help lead to the next steps.
So wise. And gratitude can begin with the tweeting of a bird outside, a warm shower, the lick of your puppy on your cheek. It can begin with the tiniest of things, and yet they can fill your heart with joy and once again create happiness first. And that's when the rest will follow. I want to thank you so much, Kathleen, for joining us. And I want everyone to know that they can receive a copy of Kathleen's book, Love It or Leave It, How to Finally Stop Tolerating Your Good Job, by simply going to whatever page they're using to listen to the show on. It could be one of 30 different pages. Blog Talk is one of them. Stitcher, iTunes, etc. And just clicking on guest gifts and you will receive a copy. So thank you for being so generous. And for the rest of you, I know that you want to be happy. I know that you want to enjoy peace of mind. Of course you do. And I promise you that you can be happy and you can enjoy all of the things that you want in this life, and you deserve to. And you deserve to feel confident and secure and happy. You've heard a lot of valuable information on my shows that will help you make happiness practices simple. But in order to make the practices stick and make them work for you, you really must have a calm and peaceful mind. And to that end, I'm giving you a free guided meditation that will bring you into that place of peaceful clarity. And that's the only place that you can actually choose happiness. A quiet, peaceful mind has access to higher wisdom and inspiration. So go ahead and click the link that says Lorraine's Gifts or subscribe at lorrainegordon.com and fill your days up with uplifting and inspirational information. That's how to have a great and happy life, I promise you. Add to your happiness by helping others, and put a comment on the bottom of this show. Others may just listen because of what they've read that you have said, and you could change their life. This is Lorraine Gordon. I'm your online coach. I see you having your best life, but you need to see it too and make it a reality. I'll be back with you next week, same time, same place. Namaste, and bye for now.
You've been listening to Happiness First, The Rest Will Follow, with Lorraine Gordon. Because I'm happy. She'll be back next week with another great show. And to learn more about Happiness First, visit LorraineGordon.com. That's LorraineGordon.com. Be sure to subscribe and receive some fantastic free gifts. Lorraine wants to bring you more of what you want, so please make a comment on the show page here. Or you can email her at Lorraine@LorraineGordon.com. And thank you for listening.